Tech Talk on RNIB Connect Radio.
Hello and a very warm welcome in to Tech Talk from RNIB Connect Radio, first heard here each Tuesday at 1, or you can catch the podcast shortly after, now on a Tuesday afternoon. Don't forget, of course, Tech Talk, it's our opportunity to get together each week as blind and partially sighted people and explore the world of accessible technology and beyond. Coming up this week, we'll be finding out if the Railboard app for iOS can make buying train tickets easier for blind and partially sighted travellers. We'll be speaking with blind content creator and social media influencer Connor Scott Gardner, and how easy is it to get started with creating your own social media content. And we'll also be hearing the first in a new series looking at how you get started with VoiceOver, the screen reading technology integrated into iPhones and Apple Macs. That's all coming up this time on Tech Talk. Welcome in to our co-hosts, Callum Stoneman and Hubert Pavalkovich. Gentlemen, how are you?
Yes. Good, thank you, Dave. How are you?
Yeah, really well. Callum, let's come to you first. What's on your technology radar? What's in your tech in tray this week?
Well, I think I'm just kind of catching up on some of the news from over the Christmas period, really. Be My Eyes have just launched their friends and family feature, which we're going to be getting into probably next week, I think. But that's an interesting feature that allows you to essentially just prioritise people you know as your Be My Eyes volunteers, which is, you know, just a really welcome feature, a welcome update. So looking forward to exploring that, seeing how it works.
Yes, indeed. Be My Eyes saved my bacon recently. I dropped my AirPod pods. Remember, we had that storm last week and I was out walking the dog and an AirPod fell out, went rolling off across the pavement, and I didn't even hear it land, quite honestly. And I made use of the volunteer. So, yeah, glad they're still looking after the volunteer service as well as the AI part of Be My Eyes. So let us know if you've got some interesting use cases for Be My Eyes. When would you use the volunteer? When would you use the AI? Hubert, how about you? What's on your technology radar this time?
For me, I'm looking into this actually now. It refers to something we've covered on Tech Talk a good few episodes ago, and that is Copilot from Microsoft, because Microsoft have now launched the free Copilot app for, well, it's certainly for iOS. I think it might be on Android as well, but it's definitely on iOS, which I'm looking forward to exploring and see what features it offers to users for free and how it compares to apps such as Bing, for example.
Well, and presumably on Windows, right?
Well, presumably. The app I found itself is on iOS, but yeah.
All right. Oh, we'll stick around, folks. It's another Tech Talk.
Now, often here on Tech Talk, we have mentioned train apps, and also a question popped up a few times about how accessible are mobile train tickets in the light of them becoming quite popular these days and a good alternative for people who, for example, may not wish to use paper tickets. Well, today I'm going to show you a very accessible way of purchasing mobile tickets through a new app I have discovered. And I say it's new for me, it has been out for a bit from what I've seen, and many users have been talking about it already online. I've recently found this app and I was comparing it to alongside Trainline to see what it's like, especially that of recent Trainline app has been good, but certain accessibility issues were there. Well, the app I'll show you today is Railboard, and what I will show you is how easy it is to purchase a mobile ticket on the iPhone using VoiceOver. And it is probably one of the most accessible ways of doing it that I have discovered, which allows you to complete the whole process from finding your journey to adding the ticket to your phone in order for it to then pop up on your lock screen. So let's take you through it.
Railboard.
So I've got Railboard here. I'm going to double tap it. So we've got the Railboard app open. I will show you some of the tabs that you've got here.
Routes, tab 1 of 5.
So that's Routes, the first tab along the bottom of the screen. That's where you can, for example, save your favorite routes, routes that you use often. So if you go to work, that's quite handy.
Pinned, tab 2 of 5.
Pinned, you can pin different trains, for example, if you want to keep an eye on how they are doing and where they're going.
Selected, live trains, tab 3 of 5.
Live trains, this is especially useful when you're at a train station, obviously, and you want to kind of look at departures and arrivals.
Planner, tab 4 of 5.
Planner, which we will be using for this demo.
My tickets, tab 5 of 5.
And my tickets, which is fairly self-explanatory. So we'll go to the planner tab.
Planner, tab 4.
So I'm off to London tomorrow, and I want to be able to purchase mobile tickets for the journey.
Planner, multi-part journeys and buy tickets. Useful for planning multi-part journeys in the future and for buying tickets. Choose departing from station. Current choice is Bedford. Button.
So as you can see, I have used this app before, and it has already selected the station I'll be travelling from, which is nice and convenient, but you can change it, and if you double tap on it, it will allow you to enter a different station. You can browse through nearby stations, and if you remember train station codes, which some people do, me included, that's always a handy way to look for stations too. So that's selected as Bedford. I will leave it as that.
Clear departing from station button.
I'm swiping to the right through the screen.
Swap stations button. Choose going to station. Current choice is London St Pancras button.
Again, I'm happy with that station since that is where I'm travelling.
Clear going to station button. Add a via, avoid, change it, or don't change it station button.
So that's quite useful if you want to make your journey a bit more specific. If you know, for example, a certain route that the app may not find automatically, but you know that route is better for whatever reason, there's ways you can do that. That you can add a station there if you want to. I'm going to leave that blank.
Single button.
So this is the types of tickets you can get. So you can get single.
Selected. Return.
Then there's button. A return.
Open return button.
Open return.
Outbound. Open return. Selected. Return button.
So return is selected, which is what I want.
Open route outbound. Selected. Depart after button.
So this is what time you want to depart after.
Arrive by button.
So arrive by.
Now button.
Select to now.
Set to now. Dimmed button. Arrive by button.
Now I'm going to change this to arrive by.
Selected. Arrive by.
Because I need to be there by a specific time.
Now. Set to now. Return.
So then there's a return. Now here is what I really like.
Selected. Depart after button. Arrive by button. Open return button. Not selected button. Set to same day button.
You can select this option, and that way it will tell you that you're returning the same day and it will find the right tickets for you, which I think is quite handy. It will still offer you to select trains for both journeys, so select rough times you'll be traveling, and there is a reason for that that I quite like to choose a rough time of travel back.
Today, picker item, adjustable.
So I've tapped on now under the outbound section because what I did forget to do is set the time of arrival. So I'm going to need to arrive there tomorrow.
Thursday, the 21st of December.
So I've swiped up.
16 o'clock, selected. Picker item, adjustable, 16 of 24.
So now it's asking me to select the hour, so I'm going to need to get there by 11.
15 o'clock, 14 o'clock, 14 of 24, selected. 13 o'clock, 13 of 24, 12 o'clock, 11 of 24, selected.
So I've now selected 11 o'clock by swiping up and down through the options.
40 minutes, selected. Picker item, adjustable, 45 of 60.
So now I need to choose the minutes, and I need to get there by 11 o'clock, so I need this to be 00.
50 minutes, 49 of 60, selected.
There we go.
11 o'clock, 0 minutes, select.
So that's selected.
Done, button. Tomorrow at 11, button. Set to now, return. Selected, depart, arrive by, button. Open return, but not selected, button. Set to same day, button. Passengers. Set to same day, button. Set to same day, dimmed.
So I've selected to be returning on the same day.
Passengers.
So that's quite handy.
One adult, button.
So passengers, one adult.
Disabled person's rail card, button.
I've added my rail card.
Clear a rail guard, button. Options. Selected, show prices. Currently turned on, button.
So I want to obviously see prices because I want to buy tickets.
Selected, include split tickets. Currently turned on, button.
I want to include split tickets because that could save you a little bit of money. It may not be massive, but it can make a difference. So it means you might have more than one ticket going one way. You might have two tickets, for example. So it splits your journey up without affecting where you're traveling or how you're getting there. Just the amount of tickets will be different.
About split tickets, button. Direct trains only. Currently turned off, button.
So you can select direct trains only. If you prefer that, obviously may not always be an option, but if you do prefer that, you can always select that and see what happens. Now, my train will be direct anyway, so I don't need to worry about that.
Selected. Plan journey. Button.
So this is the button you need to press to see the train. So not in mind, but you will get used to it while using the app. So I'll double tap.
Back. Button.
And let's see what we've got.
Choose outbound. Refresh results. Button. Last refresh just now. Earlier journeys. Button. Schedule to depart tomorrow at 7:10 from Bedford and arrive at 7:54 at London St. Pancras. Journey has one.
So that's a bit early for me. So I'm going to swipe through the journeys quite quickly until I get to roughly a sensible time.
Schedule to depart tomorrow at 9:48 from Bedford and arrive at 10:49 at London St. Pancras. Journey has one part. Duration 1 hour and 1 minute.
So I am happy with this journey, so we will go for that. And if I swipe to the left, it will also show me...
Ticket price, £18.85 for a super off-peak ticket. Rail card discount applied. First class price, £36.70. E-tickets available.
And it says e-tickets available, which I think is really good to know. So we'll double tap on that.
Pinned, tab, 2 of 5.
Now it jumped me to the tab, so I'll put my finger in the top left-hand corner.
Back button. Choose return.
So it does ask you to choose a return journey. Now, you technically don't need to worry about what time it is too much. It will affect the price of your ticket, though, so be slightly mindful. But the reason I like this is because of the iPhone doing something smart where it will put your train ticket on the lock screen for you to double tap on and open if you're asked to show your ticket. And it will do it around the time of traveling, which I think is quite clever. So I recommend you choose roughly the time you're going to travel if you know, and that ticket will stay on your lock screen for a while before and after that time. So you will have access to it for a bit, which I think is very handy because it makes it easier to quickly tap on your phone to wake it up, tap on the ticket, unlock your phone, tap on your ticket, and then show it to the conductor or at the gate. It's nice and easy.
Refresh results button.
So I will choose a rough time of travel and scroll through and see what I get.
Schedule to depart tomorrow at 14:21 from London St. Pancras and arrive at 15:22 at Bedford. Journey has one part. Duration 1 hour and 1 minute. This is the cheapest journey.
So I'm happy to go for this one, 2:21. Getting it back at about 3:22, we'll go for that.
Ticket price, £18.85.
So the price has not changed. Double tap.
Back button.
So here's next.
Ticket options. Getting ticket options, ellipsis. Selected, standard, button. First class, button.
So I can select the type of ticket I want.
Super off-peak day return. Price, £18.85. This is the cheapest ticket option. Selected off-peak trains. Return same day. Travel is allowed via any permitted route. Rail card discount applied. E-ticket available.
So everything is there that I want. So I'm going to be double tapping on that as I'm happy with that.
Back button.
So next we're going to go to the payment screen.
Payment. Complete your purchase. Summary.
So there we have the summary. So all the information that we've already seen.
Outbound journey. Return journey. 14:21 London. Outbound journey. 9:48 bed. Return journey. One adult. One disabled person. Super off-peak day return. Seat preferences. None. Add seat preferences button.
So you can add seat preferences if you wish. I don't really often do that because I don't really need any, but you can choose them if you should have a reason to do so.
Getting your tickets. Selected. E-tickets. Currently turned on button.
So e-ticket is turned on, which is exactly what we want.
E-ticket details button. Collect from station. Currently turned off button.
I have that turned off mainly because it's not the most accessible way of getting your tickets. And if the e-ticket option is available, then it's always best to go for that if you prefer to use it that way.
Collect from station details to pay. Total tickets, £18 to pay. Total, £18.85.
So that's my total.
Tickets, £18.85. Rail card discount applied. Total, £18.85. Buy with Apple Pay button.
And that's another great thing, buy with Apple Pay, so I will double tap.
Buy with Apple Pay. Loading, ellipse alert.
I will now double press Apple Pay. The side Hidden. Button.
Face ID, processing payment, processing. Done.
And it's done it.
Rail board, booking your tickets to London St. Pancras.
So it's now booking my ticket.
You're going to London St. Pancras. Message.
So now it has tapped me with haptic feedback to let me know it's done it. Let's see what we've got on the screen. So it said, you're going to London St. Pancras, message.
Ticket details, button.
Ticket details.
Ticket details, button.
And that's it. So the ticket details is where you need to tap to access your tickets.
Mobile service, 2 of 4 bars, signal strength, status bar item.
It has jumped me to the status bar. I'll just put my finger somewhere on the screen.
Back button.
Usually in the top left-hand corner where the back button should be. It's a good orientation point. Let's swipe to the right now.
Ticket details. £18.85. About your tickets. Super off-peak day return. Selected off-peak trains. Return same day. Travel is allowed via any permitted route. But getting your tickets. Apple Wallet e-tickets button.
And you've got Apple Wallet e-tickets.
PDF e-tickets button.
Or PDF e-tickets. So I'm going to tap Apple Wallet tickets.
Apple Wallet tickets button. Apple Wallet cancel button. Two passes. Heading. Add all button. 9:48 tomorrow.
And just like that, tickets are there. And tomorrow, about 9:48 or similar time, that ticket will show up on my lock screen. So if I unlock my phone and double tap on that ticket, it will come up on the screen and I can scan it at the ticket gate or show it to the person at the gate or the person on the train. But that is how simple it is to buy mobile tickets on Railboard.
Hubert Polakovic there with a demonstration of the Railboard app. It sounds pretty accessible, Hubert. We've never had so many options and choices now for buying train tickets. I probably still use the train line a little bit. And then, of course, if you're at work, you might have a travel provider who you have to use to book your tickets. Of course, you can still buy them over the counter at ticket offices, which are still open. Hurrah! And Uber now even selling train tickets. Did you know that?
Yes, I've heard it and I've seen it happen multiple times, but I've never actually tried it myself. It's something on my list because I believe you can buy train tickets. I don't know if you can buy coach tickets as well, I've seen maybe. So there are a few different types of tickets that you can buy on Uber.
Yeah, absolutely. And they reckon if you buy a train ticket on your Uber, you get some sort of credit or incentive that you could then use against further travel just with regular Uber ride-sharing vehicles.
That is true, yes.
Yeah.
That is interesting, yeah. I've seen notifications about this because every now and then I get kind of prompts from Uber about new features and new updates and stuff. And yeah, I have seen this, but no, I must admit I've not tried it. I always just go to be honest, most of the time nowadays when I buy train tickets, it's, as you mentioned, Dave, it's for work, in which case we're stuck with Trainline. And to be fair, the web interface for Trainline, certainly the one that we get at BT, is a lot nicer than it used to be. And, you know, I do find it fairly usable. But, yeah, I love the sound of this Railboard app. Definitely going to give this a go next time I'm doing personal travel. And possibly Uber as well, we'll see.
All right, let us know. How do you buy your train tickets? TechTalk at rnib.org.uk. Callum, Hubert, thanks a lot. Maybe 2024 is the year that you decide to become a social media creator or an influencer even. Many blind and partially sighted people increasingly view social media as an important tool to build our brands, develop skills, network and get into the job market. But also social media can be an important platform for social activism and taking on issues that perhaps nobody else wants to talk about. And somebody who does that in spades is Connor Scott Gardner. And Connor, welcome in to RNIB Connect Radio. The reason we are talking is a few weeks ago, I spotted a post that you had put out about the nature of creating content, how that works, some of the tools and techniques, and we will get into that in a little while. But can you just kind of go back to the beginning a little bit and just tell us a little bit about yourself and your journey into becoming a social media content creator? How did you get started?
Yeah, of course. Thank you for having me. I got started a long time ago. So I was about 16 when I started blogging, and I was really writing about my own experiences as a blind person, never really expected it to go anywhere. And then over the years, I moved more into creating video content, but I've always been a writer, I suppose, at heart. But over the years, you know, like I said, I moved more into creating video. So originally that was on YouTube, and then in more recent years on TikTok and Instagram. So I kind of work across different platforms and produce different styles of media, depending on what the platform is. So Facebook, there's a lot of written content, but I'll also post videos on there as well. TikTok is a video-based platform. And then on Instagram, I will share across the same videos I posted on TikTok, but also photos as well.
Okay. And you, like me, I think I'm right in saying you're totally blind?
Yes. Yeah.
Yeah. So can you share with us then some of the specific apps or devices that you have found to be, you know, useful and accessible in creating video? Because, you know, if you're anything like me, I mean, I make a video and I never know, like, am I in the frame really? Mm-hmm. You know, and it said I was, but then did I move a little bit? You know, have I got the angle right, the white balance, the lighting, all that stuff? So what do you use to make your content look as good as it can do?
Yeah, that's a great question. And you're right that there's a lot of questions you'll have as a blind person when creating content around my phone may be telling me, you know, one face centered, but what it's not telling me is the angle of that framing actually a good angle or not? You know, you may be centered in the frame, but that doesn't actually mean it looks good. And I think these are things that, particularly if you were born blind, you don't even necessarily know these things until maybe somebody points it out or you do a lot of reading around the subject. So there's a few things I do. I have in the past, and I still do use Aira, which is a visual interpreting service. So what I will do with them is I'll set my camera up or my phone up to a point where I think this is okay, or this is getting where I need it to be. Then I might connect with an Aira agent and say, look, this is what I'm wanting. Can you assist me with explaining how I need to move my camera to get myself in frame? And also, I want the angle to either be straight on at eye level or looking down from above. Those tend to be the two better angles. And so I'll work with them on positioning my camera. I don't always have the time or the inclination to do that. So sometimes I will just set up my phone myself and I'll use something like Be My Eyes. But instead of connecting with a site to volunteer, I'll use the new Be My AI feature, which is where you can take a photo and then use AI to describe it. Now, I think what's really key here is knowing what questions to ask. So don't just go with the description, because it'll probably tell there's one person, blah, 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 and describe that person. You need to ask questions like, at what angle is the photo taken? How is the lighting? And I've even found asking, would this angle be suitable for a video? Can get you some quite specific responses. Now, obviously, there are inherent issues with Be My AI. It's not perfect. It doesn't always bring you the details accurately. So I think you have to have an element of understanding of what you're doing as well. What I'd say is it's difficult. It's difficult being a blind content creator if you don't have somebody on hand to help you set this up. And the reality is, and this is kind of what prompted my initial post, is that a lot of the content creators we see that are very, very successful, they do have people around them. So either they live with parents or they live with a partner or they have a professional team behind them. And this absolutely isn't criticism, because I think most of us would do the same in their position. But it does mean that creating by yourself as a blind person takes so much longer. It can be very frustrating. There have been times when I've filmed and I've been like, oh, I'm sure the setup's absolutely fine. Then I've checked it afterwards and it hasn't been. And so I've either had to post content that really isn't up to standard or kind of just bin it and think, oh, I'll do it another day. And you do use a lot of time just working around your blindness.
Right. And how do you navigate that in terms of energy levels and keeping it fresh and interesting, and also managing the quality? Because as you say, you don't have a live person just sort of next to you pointing the camera, say, actually, you just need to look up a bit or move left a bit, or actually the product or whatever it is you're demonstrating isn't fully in shot. You know, so you can go through all those steps as you've described with Be My Eyes and with Ira in advance of the content. But actually, when you hit record, you're on your own then at that point. So how do you ensure that, I mean, do you feel like there is content that you've put out there that you just know, right, that probably isn't looking the best that it could be, but actually you've decided the message that I want to convey is more important than say the production values?
Yeah, definitely. And I think you have to really want to do this and you have to really believe in what you're saying. So I do talk about products and particularly books I talk about. And what I do in advance of that is I find out how much of myself can be seen in the frame. So you don't necessarily need your whole body to be seen. You know, if you're sat at a table, ultimately only your upper body is going to be seen. But you want to know, for example, can your hands and the table be seen in frame? Because that then informs when you're filming where you hold that product and what you're doing. So I do find that out in advance, but a lot of my content isn't necessarily around products. It's about educating people and it's about talking to people. And whilst it is frustrating, because there are definitely videos I would like to create, particularly videos where I'm on the move and I want to show what I'm doing, I feel like as a blind person, I mean, you've already got a cane or a dog in one hand and then trying to hold a device in the other hand and actually keep yourself in frame is basically impossible in the way it would be for a sighted person who can hold their phone on something like a selfie stick and actually glance at the camera to see that they're in frame while they're filming. I think as a blind creator who's creating on your own, you really have to do a lot of static filming, which is where you're going to set your camera up, but you're not actually moving all that much, which is really frustrating, but it kind of is what it is. But yeah, there are definitely times where I think, you know what, what I'm talking about is really important. And actually, I think that it's better that I've created this content and shared that message. And I've almost lent into the fact that, no, I'm not going to look perfect on camera. And I'm really open about this. I'm very open with my followers. And I'm very direct with them. I'm like, you know what? People can criticize me for not looking perfect, but try creating this content without any assistance and not being able to see. And I've been so honest with people because I think, actually, they need to see that side of blindness and they need to see that people are still building this content. But no, it's not going to look perfect and polished. And here's why.
Just talk us through the kind of the content creation process. So, you know, what's that process look like in terms of planning and creating and publishing? What would be a kind of a rough kind of workflow that you would typically follow?
So firstly, deciding what content I'm going to create, you know, what do I want to talk about? What really am I saying? Am I talking about a book that I like, or am I speaking about a campaign? You know, different content. I need to think about, you know, what it is I'm speaking about. Then where do I want to film? So do I want to film if I'm, say, showing a product or unboxing something, do I want to film at a table or do I want to just film a video where I'm sitting like on the sofa speaking? Then I will look at setting up the area. So that will be putting my phone on a tripod, getting a light set up, and then putting myself in the frame and all that kind of side of it. So what I tend to do at that stage is I will set my camera up and check in with Ira, or I'll set my camera up and I will either take a few photos. You can get just small Bluetooth devices that connect to your phone that when you're in the camera app, you can just press the button on this device and it will take a photo or start and stop video. So that means I can be away from my phone sitting down, not necessarily touching it, and still take a photo. So I'll take a couple of photos, then go back to my phone and run those through Be My AI and ask all the questions, make any adjustments needed. And then once I'm satisfied with that kind of side of things, I'll go back. I will start filming. I might film one or two takes, depending on how I feel about what I've said. And then I go to the editing stage. Now, editing, again, is an area that is complicated in terms of accessibility if you're blind. So there are programs like Final Cut Pro, if you're using a Mac, which are actually accessible using VoiceOver. You've also got iMovie, which is accessible, but I found not necessarily intuitive. On Windows, I haven't found any really high quality solutions to editing that I'd say are particularly great, unfortunately. On iOS, I mean, really depending on what I'm doing, and this is the thing again, I've accepted that I'm not including loads of really visually amazing transitions in my video. I'm not adding in lots of images, which would actually really help my videos and make them more exciting, because doing so is just so complicated and difficult as a blind person. But often what my videos are is just me speaking to the camera and maybe showing something there and then. And that's something that I've had to accept. And if I want to create this content, this is a compromise I have to make. So I'll edit on my phone primarily, using either the native just editing in the Photos app or using the Clips app and just cutting up clips and putting them together. And then it's the stage of them putting that content out into the world.
You're keeping it simple. Is that generally what you're saying here? Mm-hmm. So, because obviously with video production, you know, you can do transitions, you can put titles over, you know, you could potentially mix in music and things like that. Often, you know, when you've got videos on YouTube or TikTok or wherever, you know, when people are referencing things, they put visual cutaways to the thing that they're mm-hmm. talking about. Are you saying that's just something that you just don't do, or you don't feel is important, or what's your kind of mindset in terms of how much post-production you can do on your content?
So I feel that ideally it is important and it is something I would like to do. I feel like to do it and to do it well is very, very difficult. Whilst a blind person can edit with Final Cut Pro, again, you'd really have to have someone checking that, because yes, you can put in a photo, but then do you know if that image has been placed perfectly? And then you've then got to go back and change it if not. So I feel like the amount of support required to really create that visually appealing content is so high and just completely out of reach that actually it's better to produce something that is all in frame and where you are, you know, showing that product there and then in person, rather than producing something that from a technical standpoint you've done loads of work on, but actually your visuals are all off and maybe it really distracts from that video. And it's difficult because I would like to have more complex videos and produce that, but I've decided that it's better to stick to something that I know I can do to not a perfect standard, but at least an acceptable standard.
Have you established connections or relationships with other content creators? I remember you were quite active on Clubhouse and you tried to get a bit of a kind of a creators forum going a few years back. Is that an area that still interests you? What are those relationships like, or do you think of yourself as a bit of a lone wolf?
Yeah, I have a good relationship with a lot of content creators, even if, you know, our way of doing things is really different, because I do know a lot of creators who have kind of that support behind them to build their content, and I think that's fine. You know, I think most of us would do it if we had that. I would say I have a good relationship with them. I would love to see a more honest and realistic kind of forum for content creators. I think a lot of the time when content creators are invited to get together, they're invited by brands or by companies who want a polished conversation about content creation. They want it to be to kind of skate over those barriers. What they want is to say, oh, well, here are three disabled content creators and here's the amazing content they produce. And that's really important, don't get me wrong, but they're not really discussing honestly how difficult it is and the barriers that exist. So I would love to see spaces for us as content creators that are really for us to get together and talk about what's working well, what isn't working well, what needs to change, and then maybe as a collective bringing demands to companies like TikTok, you know, because TikTok has a lot of native editing features in the app, and the vast majority of those, again, are not accessible. And I think actually that's an area where things could be made more accessible. The nature of social media apps is to make editing very user-friendly. And the good thing about that is it's designed for people who maybe don't feel comfortable using a video editing app that's hugely complex or software, but you can kind of do one-click filters and things. And actually, if that sort of thing was made accessible to blind creators, it could make a huge amount of difference. Unfortunately, it's not. And so I think the difficulty is often we're speaking on our own and saying, you know, this needs to change, and we don't have power as a collective. So I think we could all be better as creators at working together and saying, actually, you know, even if you have that support, recognizing that other creators don't, and say, well, let's work together, let's get some kind of petition, or let's write a list of requests or demands and bring that to a content, you know, to a creation platform like TikTok.
And it sounds like you're really up for that then, advocating for greater mm-hmm. accessibility and inclusion within the kind of social media and technology industries more widely. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah. Because things need to change. Like, if we're not going to be left behind, this is the thing. There will be blind people who say, oh, but video is just not accessible to blind people. You know, blind people, we should stick to audio. It's much easier. It's much better. And I get it. I really get it. But the reality is that society is moving past that. And that doesn't mean audio is not important. I mean, we've seen a massive boom in podcasting. Sighted people as well love podcasts when they're driving, when they're going for a run. It's not that audio doesn't matter. It's just that video also matters. And we cannot resist that change, not if we don't want to be left behind. So I think what we have to do is demand to be included and to be given an equal platform.
Can you recommend any resources or platforms that you think have been particularly helpful for blind individuals who'd like to get into more content creation?
Oh, I think that's difficult. I think all platforms come with their inherent problems. I do know that creating Facebook Reels is more accessible than creating a TikTok video, for example. So I'd say maybe if you feel really nervous about starting on a whole new platform and you're already familiar with Facebook, maybe just experiment with some things on there. I don't think there are any what I'd call really high quality resources to get people started. And perhaps that's an area of opportunity as well for us as existing creators, is to build something. And to build something for, you know, other blind people, rather than building material like videos for a sighted audience, you know, to build some kind of knowledge resource for other blind creators. I would say maybe start on a social media platform you already feel confident with and work from there. A lot of it is just trial and error, and a lot of it is working out what you want to do and then really asking questions and looking up information and finding out, okay, if I want to create videos about this, what do I need to do? It is what I'd say is the best way to get started. It is a lot of work.
Yeah, because there are a few resources around for those of us interested in audio, right? We've got the Sound Without Sight project now. You know, back in the mists of time, we used to have the PC audio group, and of course there's things like, you know, Reaper. You know, that's got a bit of a kind of a community around it. I know Jonathan Mosen's got his Blind Podmaker group, you know, so actually, you know, audio producers and podcasters arguably are comparatively well served compared to those who are interested in producing video shorts for social media. So what would your aspirations be then going forward? What do you kind of, how do you see the future for blind content creators?
I think that what I would say is, unless things change, unless things become more accessible, what we will see is the same three or four creators effectively representing the whole community because they're the only ones who have the resources and support behind them. And so the reality is, because their content is more visually appealing and engaging, they are likely to get the brand sponsorships. And so you see a very then narrow range of blind people being represented. And the danger of that is, it's like any industry, is people who already have some kind of privilege or who have the resources are the voices that get heard. And so then those voices who don't have that support and who arguably need to get heard don't get heard. So I think there is a danger of that. There is a real, like a very real danger of that. However, I do think if we as creators put in more effort to work together and to kind of hold these companies accountable, there will be greater accessibility. And so then more people will have the opportunity to create. And I personally feel like that's a good thing. We need more diversity in whose voice is getting heard and whose experiences are valued. And so I think it's going to take some work, but I hope that work does take place. And I hope that the companies will get on board as well.
You've still got a day job. This is clearly not a full-time career that's going to pay your mortgage or rent or whatever.
No, it's very much
so
not.
I mean, would that be your advice? What would you say to an individual who is looking to get into this area? What specific advice would you have?
Yeah, I mean, really don't start with the belief that it's going to become your full-time job. There may come a point where creators decide that actually they need to take a risk and make this their full-time job. That tends to come at a point where they've already got a significant following. I see a lot of particularly younger people going, I want to be a content creator when I grow up. And I'm like, that's great. That's not a problem. What is your job that's going to pay your bills? Because this will not pay your bills. The reality is, even when you start to get quite well known, you'll be invited to events. You'll get free tickets to events. You might be given products to review. That doesn't pay your bills. It's cool. It's really exciting. It's amazing. But until you're at a point where you have thousands or hundreds of thousands of followers, which is not a point I'm at, you are not getting paid brand deals, which actually can then pay your bills. So have other skills as well. Have other things that you really care about. Because I think if you make this your entire life, it can become quite demoralizing. So I think you do need other things as well, and be realistic. Like, I mean, I'm at a point where I really think about my future, and I think about things like, how much is in my pension? You know, what age am I going to retire at, and how much money am I going to have when I retire? That's really boring, but you do reach a point where you start thinking about that, and you don't think about that when you're like 17. So I would say be realistic and recognize that this probably is never going to be a full-time job. And if it turns into one, that's amazing. That's so cool. And that is a huge bonus. But be realistic about where you want your life to go other than content creation.
Listeners interested in following you, Connor, on social media, where do we find you?
So you can find me on TikTok at Connor Scott Gardner. Same username on Instagram. I have a Facebook page, which is under Connor Scott Gardner as well. So I've got a public Facebook page, which you can follow. Those are kind of the big three. I'm also on Threads, and I am on X, formerly Twitter as well. So you can find me just across social media.
Connor Scott Gardner, thank you so much for joining us here on RNIB Connect Radio.
Thank you so much for having me.
We've had an email from Nick, who writes, "Hi all, I was pleasantly surprised to hear you talking about football during a recent episode of Tech Talk. I wonder if you know of where I could listen to a proper audio described football match, not just radio commentary, which is often interrupted. What do we think, gentlemen?"
I think when it comes to radio commentaries, I think there are a few options you can explore there if you want less interruptions. I often find radio commentaries, some of the interruptions are during the non-eventful points in the game that's being covered, but if you would want the whole game, other options you can explore is, depending on what team you want to listen to, see if they have their own commentary stream available, which then shouldn't be interrupted. The other alternative is the Flash Score app, which I sometimes use. I use it to follow a lot of teams, but some games do have audio commentary, which sometimes is taken from the radio stream, but sometimes it's their own flash score commentary, which is also uninterrupted. So that is certainly a couple of options there for you.
Yeah, I mean, they are football commentaries, right? So they're probably going to have a little bit more analysis and less audio description. Callum, are you a football fan?
Yeah, I'm not a massive follower, I must admit, but yeah, my wife and her family are all Manchester City fans, so I've been kind of dragged into supporting that team. And yeah, I do watch some of the games, I do listen to some of the games, I should say, because I tend to just put up with the radio commentary. But yeah, you're right, there can sometimes be interruptions, or they'll, as Hubert said, I think it's during the non-eventful points, but yeah, sometimes they can be just random interruptions, or they could start giving you updates on other games that are going on. And yeah, it does take away from it a little bit. I haven't found any proper audio description. I guess the closest example I've seen of it, although it's not very helpful for your question, I guess, is the what they did with the World Cup last year. They had proper AD there.
Well, in 22, at the end of 2022. Yeah. There was a dedicated app, wasn't there? FIFA put out this app where you could actually get an audio described football match, where there was a lot of attention to the description of the kit and the stadia and stuff that you just wouldn't typically get, because usually football commentary is about obviously what's happening in terms of the action, but then very quickly going to the summariser for that analysis, which is normally what you get, and that's different from audio description, right?
Yeah, and I was really hoping that what we saw with the World Cup would have caused a bit of movement on this, to be honest, and you know, maybe seeing this become a bit more common. But so far, it doesn't really seem to have, which is a shame.
Mm. All right, so check out your favourite team to see if they have their own commentary available, or maybe that Flash Score app suggested by Hubert. And let us know, Nick, if you find anything else, and we'll keep an eye on this as well. But thank you very much for your email. We've heard from Kyla, who is a watch collector and enthusiast from Idaho in the United States. And Kyla writes about a Swiss motion watch with adjustable volume, and also references a couple of products from Cobalt and wonders where they can get more information. Talkie watches with adjustable volume, gentlemen. Are you aware of any?
Well, there are a couple that Kyla mentions here from Cobalt, and potentially from RNIB. We're kind of looking into it, but you've got a good point here, because I used to use talking watches a few years ago. I went through quite a few of them because for some reason they never seemed to last very long. But yeah, you're right. None of the ones that I had, thinking back to it, had adjustable volume, which was a bit of a problem. It's one of the reasons that I really love tactile watches or the Apple Watch, because you can adjust the volume of voiceover, but that's way overkill if you just want to know the time. But yeah, these talking watches that I used to have, I think I've said before, you know, they were okay if you were on your own, but if you tried to check the time during, in my case, during school or overnight, for example, you wake the whole street up sometimes with some of them.
Hubert, where can we find out more about talking watches with adjustable volume?
Well, I think certainly calling the RNIB, contacting the helpline and speaking maybe to the staff there, or the Products for Life store, which we're going to look to speak to have a chat and see what other watch alternatives there are. So it's something we will definitely investigate with the Products for Life store to see what offerings they have when it comes to talking watches.
Thanks very much for your email, Kyla. Watch this space. See what I did?
Very good.
Oh, yeah. Dear. Yeah. We've heard from Anila, who enjoyed our piece about the virtual guides for Liverpool Street train station. Anila is involved with the Bristol Sight Loss Councils, and they're involved in developing further guides, and would like to share that Reading is next on their list. Audio guides for train stations, do you use them, Hubert, Callum?
I've never used them, but it sounds quite interesting. It's one of these things that I keep meaning to explore and see how helpful it actually is when you end up back in that station after listening to the guide. I find them quite a unique way of finding what's there. And I guess it's a good way to kind of give yourself a bit of a pre-warning as to what to expect when you go into the station. So it's definitely a good way of doing it. And it's unique.
Yeah, it's sort of having the time to apply it, isn't it? Because I don't know about you, Callum Stoneman, when I'm travelling, I just want to jump on my next train. And sometimes just either getting assistance or asking somebody, or if it's a station I know, I just kind of go to where I need to be. Sometimes these guides contain a lot of information, don't they? And you've got to almost ring fence a bit of time to kind of learn it.
Yeah, I mean, none of the stations near me have it, I don't think. Although if I'm wrong, then yeah, please do correct me. But yeah, I imagine it's something you'd have to listen to in advance, maybe even listen to it a couple of times, I think, just to try and get your head around it. And as you said, yeah, sometimes you can be rushing about a bit. I know for me, if like, say, one train's delayed, then that means you've only got maybe, I don't know, 5 minutes to rush over to the next train. So yeah, how practical are they in that situation? I'm not sure. I'd love to try these out though. And good to know that Reading's next on the list as well. So good to see that, you know, clearly these are, I don't know if popular is the right word, but clearly they're in development and it seems to be going well from the feedback.
Yeah, and Anila, do let us know when that Reading guide is available, because that's a vast station, isn't it? Yeah. Now they've got the Elizabeth line there as well. It can be a complicated station to navigate independently. So, yeah, do keep us posted on that one. And thank you so much for your email. And finally, this week, we have heard from Alan, who would like to know, is it possible for me to change the date and time on my Orbit Reader 40 as it is looking at 2021 times? I would like your advice. Well, good news, Alan, it is possible to change it. If you press the select key, so that's the middle of the circle, and the up arrow key, that will take you into the Orbit Reader menu. And then you can arrow down through the list of settings and you should find time and date settings in there. If you need a bit of further help, then I'm sure our Tech for Life team can assist with that. Thank you all for your emails and comments and questions. We always love to hear from you. If you'd like to get in touch, it's the usual email address, techtalk@rnib.org.uk. That's techtalk@rnib.org.uk.
Hello and welcome to another bite-sized screen reader series here on Tech Talk. So, following the success of the narrator series we did on the show a couple of months ago, I thought I'll bring you another screen reader series, this time focused on Apple's screen reader VoiceOver. Now, in this series particularly, we will focus on the iPhone side of things when it comes to using VoiceOver, but a lot of these gestures and concepts that I'll show you will apply to the iPad as well. So whether you're looking to get a new iPad or iPhone or learn how to use either device, this series will help you. VoiceOver is also available on other Apple devices. So these are the Apple Watch range of devices, which is the Apple Smartwatch, the Apple TV, which is a TV box you can plug in to make your TV more accessible or have a smart accessible TV, and of course, Apple's range of computers, so at the Apple Mac. But yes, as I've said today, we will focus on the iPhone side of things with VoiceOver. And in this first episode, I will introduce you to a few little important things when it comes to turning on VoiceOver and some essential settings that might help you. So when it comes to turning on VoiceOver, you can turn it on out of the box by simply triple clicking either the side button on the right hand side of the device or the home button if you have an iPhone with the home button, and you can then go through the setup process. However, the setup process at first can be a bit daunting, especially for a new user. So there are organizations that can help you and take you through that setup process. To get more information, you can always contact RNIB's helpline or the Tech for Life team. You can call the helpline on 0303 123 9999 or email tfl@rnib.org.uk to contact the Tech for Life team. Apple themselves can also help you set up your device. If you purchase it directly from the store, they can set it up for you and turn on VoiceOver if the setup process is a bit daunting for the first time. Otherwise, if you prefer to do it yourself, VoiceOver will take you through that. Now, there are a couple of ways to turn on VoiceOver. The triple click, as I've mentioned, will turn on out of the box. But sometimes that might need enabling if the device has been set up already, which I will show you quickly how to do in a second. The other ways to turn on VoiceOver is through Siri. So you can hold down either the side button or the home button, summon Siri and ask to turn on VoiceOver or turn off VoiceOver. And you can also do it through settings by going to accessibility and then VoiceOver at the top, and there'll be a switch at the top that you can toggle. That's something that often can be something you can ask a sighted person to do if you want VoiceOver turned on and none of the quick methods I've described above are working. So before I show you a few things, one other thing to note is that VoiceOver does change the way the iPhone is operated. So it changes all the gestures. So the gestures that a sighted person would use will be very different to what a VoiceOver user would be using. So that's worth keeping in mind if you're passing your phone to a sighted person to help you out with something. Maybe VoiceOver doesn't like a specific app or another reason. It's always worth to turn VoiceOver off because then a sighted person will use it. Also, what I will show you next is a few quick settings. So the first essential setting that I will show you is accessibility shortcut, which is pretty much at the very bottom of the accessibility screen. So if you swipe through settings,
search, dictate, Hubert, Apple, AirPlay, Wi-Fi, Bluetooth.
And by swiping, I mean swiping one finger to the right, as if you're trying to wipe some dust off a screen. But I will cover these gestures in a bit more detail in the next episode.
Accessibility button.
So accessibility is where you go to.
Vision heading.
Now, this is at the very bottom of the screen. So for now, I'm going to scroll right to the bottom of that list and show you where that setting is and what VoiceOver says when you find it, so that we can cover the basic navigation gestures in the next episode.
Rows 13 to 27 of 27.
So I've swiped to the bottom. Now I'll put my finger at the bottom of the screen to see what the last option is.
Per app settings button.
So you've got per app settings. That's the last option, and I can't go any further, as you can hear. I'm going to swipe one finger to the left.
Accessibility shortcut, VoiceOver button.
So it says here, accessibility shortcut, VoiceOver. That is already set up for me, but I will quickly show you what you need to do here.
Zoom.
I'll take you to the top of the screen.
Accessibility. Configure accessibility. Back button. Accessibility shortcut. Heading. Configure and then triple-click the side button to toggle accessibility features on or off.
So fairly self-explanatory there. You can choose which accessibility settings you can turn on using this shortcut. I prefer setting one of them rather than multiple accessibility features, because then that feature will turn on instantly and you won't have to actually select one, which can make it a bit harder.
Triple click the side button for heading Apple Watch mirroring.
And here is where you've got a long list of different accessibility features that you can enable. And what you simply need to do is swipe to the right until you hear VoiceOver.
Selected VoiceOver. Actions available.
Now, as you can hear, it says selected VoiceOver. So VoiceOver is selected. So if I press that button on the side quickly three times, it will turn VoiceOver on and off. And that's the only option I have selected. So I will show you how this works. I will quickly press the side button on my device that you'll be able to hear.
VoiceOver off.
So there we go, it's turned off. I will press it again.
VoiceOver on, settings, accessibility, back button, and screen curtain on.
And it's on. So that's VoiceOver turned on and off with the triple click, and it's the nicest and probably the easier way to set that up. I'll show you a few more settings that are also recommended. So I'll take you to the top of the accessibility settings and I'll take you to the touch section.
Zoom, off, display, motion, spoken, audio, physical, touch, button, touch accommodations, off.
And here there are a couple of settings I will recommend you might want to switch.
If you have trouble, use tap to wake, switch button, on.
So tap to wake, that's currently turned on. Now, what this simply means is that if you have an iPhone without the home button, you can tap on it once to wake it up and to make it talk. Some people like that, some people don't. Sometimes you can accidentally tap your phone and wake it up when you don't intend to. So you can actually turn that setting off.
Off.
Which is quite handy because then you will not wake the phone up by accident.
Wake the screen when you tap the display. Prevent lock to end call. Switch button on. Prevent the side button from ending the current call.
So that setting is fairly self-explanatory. If you press the side button when you're in a call and it hangs up and you don't like that, you can turn that off to make sure that you avoid this sort of accident from happening.
Prevent lock to end call. Switch button on.
Or you can turn that on. So it's in the on position at the moment, which is quite handy. And the other quick setting is in the display section of settings. So I'll go back out of accessibility.
Touch button. Airplane mode. Switch button. VPN. Notification. Sounds. Focus. Screen time. General. Controls. Display and homes. Display and bright. Appearance. Heading. Light button. Selected. Dark. Automatic. Text size. Button. Bold text. Switch button. Off.
So I'm currently swiping through the options in the display section to find the setting.
Brightness. Heading. Screen brightness. 34%. True tone. Switch. Automatically adapt eye for night shift. Off. Auto lock. Never. Raise to wake. Switch button. Off.
And that is it. Raise to wake. Now, what happens with the phones, especially that do not have the home button, is if you raise the phone and the phone detects that raising motion, it will wake up the display and it will start talking. Now, I found personally that setting can be quite irritating because sometimes you might raise the phone accidentally and not actually want it to wake. So, for example, I found if I was sitting down and my phone was in my pocket, as soon as I stand up, it thinks I'm raising it and therefore starts talking. So it's always handy to turn that option off also. So that is it for the Bite Size episode 1 of Apple VoiceOver. In the next episode, I will tell you about some essential gestures and also how you can practice gestures with the VoiceOver practice area. Thank you very much for listening, and I hope you enjoyed it, and I will see you in the next episode.
Thank you very much to Hubert Pavalkovich there for his first installment of our series on getting started with the VoiceOver screen reader, the technology built into Apple devices that make them accessible. That's it from Tech Talk this week. Thank you so much for your company. Don't forget, of course, Tech Talk, we're first on Tuesdays at 1 p.m. on channel 730 on your Freeview box. Or if you prefer a podcast, that comes out Tuesday afternoons now, so you don't have to wait till Friday. So you don't have to do anything. You should get that straight away. Just ask your smart speaker or smartphone to play the latest episode of RNIB Tech Talk. And if you've got any feedback, comments, suggestions, questions, anything like that, we'd be delighted to hear from you. You can send an email or even a voice note to techtalk@rnib.org.uk. That's techtalk@rnib.org.uk. But from myself, Dave Williams, Callum Stoneman, and Hubert Pavalkovich, bye for now.
Bye-bye.
Goodbye.
Bye-bye.